right to it. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. It is Wednesday night and approximately, 25 hours post State of the Union. Now, I'll tell you, first of all, the initial reaction to this, and you have to know this because this is always what matters. The initial reaction, for example, on CNN was immediate praise for the president's remarks. The first pundits to speak, Jake Tapper was hosting the post-speech wrap-up. And almost immediately, the praise was effusive. Now, before we get into the meat of the speech, this is always the most telling reaction is the first one. It's what people say first. It's before they've had a chance to confer with their colleagues, to get their marching orders from their bosses, and to check their Twitter account for where the political wind is blowing. So that said, the reaction was positive, and also I would say the audience reaction was largely positive. There was a snap poll taken immediately after, and viewers overwhelmingly approved Trump's State of the Union speech. It was a 75% to 25% approval rating. Now, you got to break that down a little bit. You got to understand that those numbers are skewed a little bit heavier toward Republicans. It's normal for Republicans to, well, if it's got a Republican incumbent, more Republicans are going to watch Trump and more Democrats are going to watch Obama, generally how these things go. So party identification, Republicans in the sample were 42% to 25% Democrats and 33% independents. So when you take Democrats and independents together, you still have a larger group than you do the sample size of the Republicans. I still think this is a significant result. Aren't we told, after all, that these independents, this is where the treasure lies. These are this is where the money is, so to speak, when it comes to winning elections, the swing voters. So these are the people that that obviously presidents and other politicians court when it comes to election day. Now, I think particularly important is the feelings that people had from the speech, because right away, one thing I can tell you about the speech was that it was not a dark Trump speech. It was characterized by a number of people as such. It was not a dark speech at all. Quite the opposite. The speech was warm, was sensitive even. And Trump was, I would say, a little more subdued than he normally is. Now, how did the speech make you feel? Here's how it ranks. 65% said proud. Now, the reason for the proud response is that Trump talked a hell of a lot about America. He talked about what makes this country great. He talks about, well, he did a highlight and mentioned several people that were up in the stands. Every president does this. They invite people in to highlight certain issues. So anyway, there it is. There's a heroine, a service member, a couple, several service members, in fact. There was a guy from North Korea who had escaped, had a harrowing tale of having lost his legs and used crutches to get across the border and travel hundreds of miles to get away from North Korea. He actually, once he was called up, and he got up and he waved, and then he had his crutches, the ones that he'd made in North Korea, and these were flimsy little cheap things that you can tell were homemade, and he carries them with him. Trump said, you know, this guy carries these crutches with him to remind him of his harrowing, of his tale, of his life story. And seeing that, there probably wasn't a dry eye in the room. So the point being, this type of imagery, this type of a focus of the speech led to a warm response. And you couldn't help but sitting there, hey, look, this is the country where a guy that escapes from North Korea wants to be. This is the country where this guy wants to come to. And you could see tears in his eye as members of the audience applauded. And and clapped. So the other important statistic here, 35% felt safer. And only 14% felt scared and 21% felt angry. Well, the 21%, of course, every Democrat watching the speech felt angry. And you saw that on Twitter last night. People sounding off with the most ridiculous comments. And most of these people, by the way, aren't even watching the speech. They're just lamenting that the moron president is up there speaking. So at any rate, you have that breakdown. Now, what I always... That's kind of what people are saying. Now, I'll tell you what I think. I think one thing about the speech is that Trump was subdued and he was tired in a way that is unusual for him. I noticed him being a little bit worn down. And I saw this in Davos when he was in Switzerland giving his remarks there. And I commented on it then. I don't know necessarily what to make of it. The most obvious theory is that things are not good right now at home because Melania's got all stormy eyes for him right now because of the affair with the porn star and allegations. Excuse me. But nonetheless, that could certainly be a part of it. The other other part of it is that, you know, a guy like Trump, who's super high energy, can come across sometimes a little bit. Well, what's the word? Unsensitive. And I think they're at the major point of the speech. I'm sure they sat together when they laid out the outline for what Trump was to deliver and achieve in the State of Union speech. The objective was to unify the country. The objective was to sell Trump as a bipartisan leader. To give Trump the necessary political thrust to be able to achieve his short and long term goals, and specifically immigration. So here is where we're at. He did that. I don't know if people are telling Trump, don't whatever you do, don't use so much bravado. Don't be so blah. So what does he do? You'll hear, I'll play some clips here in a second. You'll hear it was a little bit subdued. The other part of the speech that I think surprised many watchers, he really didn't go off script. So he stayed 100% on target with what was on the prompter. And his asides were not in any way, shape or form destructive, which I think sometimes people find. So we have... Here is sort of a clip here that I think highlights what he is talking about and what his agenda as an America First agenda means. And you'll see how instead of just saying America First, he's weaving a certain amount of empathy, of sympathy, of feeling, and of heart. Listen to this.
We are proud that we do more than any other country anywhere in the world to help the needy, the struggling, and the underprivileged all over the world. But as President of the United States, my highest loyalty, my greatest compassion, my constant concern is for America's children, America's struggling workers, and America's forgotten communities. I want our youth to grow up to achieve great things. I want our poor to have their chance to rise. So tonight, I am extending an open hand to work with members of both parties to protect our citizens of every background, color, religion, and creed.
Now, of course, this olive branch was not accepted immediately by Nancy Pelosi. She was caught right in that particular moment as she did. She was grimacing and rolling her eyes. And also she kept looking back. If you're watching the speech, Nancy Pelosi got a lot of airtime because she was so theatrical. And part of what she was doing is she kept looking back and frowning and scowling at members of her caucus that were clapping. She was like, yeah, she was like the hall monitor of Trump applause. Now, if anybody was giving Trump any adoration, she wanted none of it. So she was there scowling. But you see what Trump is saying. Look, I am here for Americans, for my sympathy to Americans, to take care of Americans, all the Americans that are here in this country. And he has this great line that everybody immediately liked. And I think this probably was the line of the speech. And it had to do with dreamers. And we keep hearing about dreamers, these great kids that have come from, you know, countries south of the border. They're undocumented, but, you know, but they have a dream and they have hopes and they have aspirations and they want an education and they deserve a chance to make it in this world. And Trump had a clever retort to this argument without necessarily having to put down dreamers or designated dreamers according to the DACA definition. Listen to this.
My duty and the sacred duty of every elected official in this chamber is to defend Americans, to protect their safety, their families, their communities, and their right to the American dream. Because Americans are dreamers too.
That's the line. That's the line. Because Americans are dreamers too. Now, and you see very cleverly, he doesn't say that DACA recipients are not dreamers. He just says, look, we keep talking about these undocumented kids that are, you know, now adults, many of them, in this country. And I get that we need to be compassionate, but isn't our compassion owed first to those that are here legally and that are, in fact, by citizenship, at least, actual Americans? Now, this, of course, this then segued into a talk about the dangerous threat of illegal immigrants that are coming to this country and doing harm. And this became, I think, the primary focus of the criticism of the speech. And this, in my opinion, is so fantastically misplaced because he was very measured. When you compare this to other Trump rhetoric, I mean, this was very measured stuff. So what he said here. And now just listen to this. He's talking about who MS-13, right? Who these bad gangs that are coming mostly stalked by illegal immigrants and the like, who they're targeting. So listen to what he says.
Struggling communities, especially immigrant communities, will also be helped by immigration policies that focus on the best interests of American workers and American families. For decades, open borders have allowed drugs and gangs to pour into our most vulnerable communities. They've allowed millions of low-wage workers to compete for jobs and wages against the poorest Americans. Most tragically, they have caused the loss of many innocent lives.
Now, at this point, he introduces two couples that are in the gallery, and they were parents to two girls that were murdered by MS-13 gang members in Long Island in New York. And when he introduces them, this is where it gets interesting. So he introduces them. It's very nice. They're really, again, it's a very emotional moment. The parents. I think one or two of them begin to tear up and even cry a little bit as he's describing what happens to the girls. The girls' names are Kayla and Nisa. And I guess six members of MS-13 have been charged in their murder. And his point is, look, if they weren't allowed to come into this country and were prevented from doing so, or in many cases entering, getting deported, re-entering and re-entering again and again, then the consequences here, the murder of these two young girls would never have taken place. And the uproar here from the left, this is the part of the speech. If you've heard any criticism about the speech being dark and divisive, it all comes down to this part. Because this is where Trump says, hey, not all the dreamers are warm, fuzzy people that we want here. And he's making an argument. I have to say this. He's making an argument for supporting some of that draft proposal that he sent to Congress, right? And in part of it, it really highlights that we want good character. We're only going to extend this benefit to people who have no criminal records and that type of thing. But the response is just staggering. So when we come back, I want to. There's a lot of back and forth about this. I'll play some reactions in the press too, but Marco Rubio, he had the comeback of the night, and this was on CBS. It was actually this morning, but it was the comeback this is the comeback of comebacks to this criticism, and he's spot on. So I'm going to play that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio
790 KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, and talking about Trump's State of the Union speech last night. Very interesting. So at one point, you know, he gets into the MS-13 drug situation. Here's a snippet of him talking about these two girls that were murdered by six gang members. Listen to this.
Six members of the savage MS-13 gang have been charged with Kayla and Nisa's murders. Many of these gang members took advantage of glaring loopholes in our laws to enter the country as illegal, unaccompanied, alien minors and wound up in Kayla and Nisa's high school. Tonight, I am calling on Congress to finally close the deadly loopholes that have allowed MS-13 and other criminal gangs to break into our country.
And this is the very predictable response by Van Jones to exactly the point that Trump is making. And listen to the logical leap that he makes.
Let me just say, master salesperson, he used all of those stories really well. He was selling sweet tasting candy with poison in it. What he said about those young people. He implied, and he did it deliberately, that dreamers are gang members.
Is that what he did? Did he call dreamers gang members? No, he said we've got a loophole that we've got to close because gang members are exploiting it. Marco Rubio this morning, I promised I'd give you the comeback of the day. Marco Rubio's talking to Gail King on CBS this morning. And King's going off. Here's the exchange.
Many people took offense when he seemed to tie the dreamers to MS-13 gang members. Did that trouble you?
No, I understand why people get upset, you know, about that. But in the end, I'm not sure that's justified. That's like saying, you know, you can't criticize the mafia because they're Italian-American. I mean, the bottom line is MS-13 is an evil, horrifying organization that's killing and hurting people all over the country. Of course, the majority of immigrants are not members of MS-13. In fact, the majority
of the
victims...
And that's the point. The majority of them are not members of MS-13.
Right.
And
hold on a second. But he never said they were. And my second point is the majority of the victims of MS-13 happen to be from immigrant families and immigrant communities. MS-13 does not go into Beverly Hills. MS-13 is in communities where other immigrants are living, and that is who they prey on, and that is who they harm. So when you're going after MS-13, you're going after a gang that is hurting immigrants. So I understand that in this environment, people want to say that, but I'm not sure that's a fair criticism. I really am not.
Okay.
And King just goes, okay. Because it isn't. Do you see the difference? Well, no. I mean, if you're a reasonable person, you get it. You have to be able to... The problem with immigration and open borders is you don't get to pick who's in the country. That's the problem. And the entire purpose of un-immigration policy is to have Congress set the standards for who comes in and who does not. Now, we probably have, by a multiple of a lot of zeros, the number of people who want to come here versus the number of people that we can reasonably afford to take in. We don't have an unlimited number of slots. This is just like any other application process that we're all familiar with. If you went to school, if you went to college, If you're applying for a particular job somewhere, I mean, everybody wants, you know, if you're in tech, everybody wants to work for Google or for Facebook or the big companies, or at least most people do. It doesn't mean that every person that wants in gets the job. And I don't know why that concept we're totally okay with when it comes to business. We're okay with it when it comes to education, even, which is a liberal bastion of supposedly of inclusiveness and big, wide open arms. Yet these institutions that are, in many cases, right, Ivy League schools and the like, that are shouting about how terrible and evil Trump is, they themselves discriminate against inferior applicants day in and day out. That is what these institutions do. For some reason, suddenly, all logic goes out the window and we're supposed to welcome everybody in. But the truth is, most of these liberals, just like King Rubio says here to King, they live in Beverly Hills. They live in Manhattan. It does not affect them. Instead, it affects the poorest of the poor, the very people, the minorities that Democrats purport to protect. The hypocrisy is rich and stunning. All right, we got John Wolf up next with the news. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. 800-222-5222 is the phone number. Sam@samnation.com is the email. Now, back to briefly to that YouGov poll, CBS YouGov poll that was taken immediately after the State of the Union speech, polling members of the public that had watched it. One interesting bit of breakdown here on some questions is the will it help you or hurt you? And so they ask, will it help you? Will it hurt you? Will it not affect you in relation to policies proposed by the speech? Now, fascinating. What would you think the number of people that felt that the speech, that what was promised in the speech by Trump would help them? Big number, small number, what do you think? 54%. 54% think that they would be helped. That is a huge number. It's a huge number. Now, how many would be hurt, conversely? Only 14%. So again, once you get into those type of small numbers, those are the diehards. Those are people that are just whatever Trump says. Trump could promise to cure cancer and they would say, no, no, thank you. I want cancer. Trump says no to cancer. I'm in. And then 32% says it just won't affect them at all. But I don't think that that's, I don't, again, that's a much bigger number than the hurt you number. Well, some people were, you're right, some people had their feelings hurt. And the funniest moment, speaking of hurt feelings, was when Luis Gutierrez, who was a congressman, loves illegal aliens. He's from Illinois. And he, as soon as people began chanting USA, 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 he bolted out of there. And it was right at the moment when there was a wide angle, at least on CNN's feed, there was a wide angle of the room, so not a close-up on Trump, and you just saw him sort of duck out and run out as soon as that happened. Some people were joking that he was looking for a safe space. But regardless, yes, Luis Gutierrez literally ran out in the middle of the speech. Do you remember who was the, was it Joe Wilson? Who was a congressman who yelled, "You lie," during one of Obama's speeches? And that was, I mean, we dissected that for months. Well, how dare he disrespect the president? How dare he, you know, basically malign the president was supposed to be an exercise of bipartisanship and patriotism and the like. So anyway, there it is. Well, OK. And so Luis Gutierrez here ran out the door. One thing that was really different about Trump's State of the Union versus any of Obama's speeches. Do you know what that was? There's one critical difference in my view, and I noticed it right away. And then it humored me, actually, that people had gone on to count how many times he said we Because Trump said we, according to sources, 129 times. Now, I haven't counted to verify it, but he said we many, many times. And the result of that is well, first of all, we sounds a lot more inclusive, doesn't it? You remember Obama's speeches? It was always I, and then I did this, and then I proposed that, and I led so-and-so. I mean, it was always about him. And I don't know if it was his oratory style or if this is just Obama's outsized ego, but he never really got out of his own way when it came to talking about himself in the first person. And Trump's very, very smartly, right, because the accusation is that he's the guy with the giant ego and he's the guy who has who's, you know, large, you know, just full of himself. And so for him to do it this way, and it was really the speech, the best way to sum it up, it was a celebration of all things American. And it goes back to his remarks in Davos, where he says, look, if you're president of a country, you need to be a cheerleader. You need to be a cheerleader for that country. And you can't possibly be an effective president without being an advocate and a cheerleader in that sense. And so I'll tell you, that's what he was. Last night, Trump was a cheerleader. When you look at the responses here, people loved it. Okay, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski here for my friend, my attorney, my champion, sweet James Bergner. This is the guy that you call if you've been in an accident, if you got rear-ended, walking in a crosswalk, some car hits you, train accident, you know, if you're like one of these congressmen going to a retreat in West Virginia. Yeah, you've got to call James, okay? Know your rights. Do not try to do this accident resolution on your own. It's not a good idea. You don't know what you're doing. The other side will take advantage of you, and you'll end up being a victim twice. So don't do that. Call Sweet James and his team. They're standing by 24/7. All consultations are confidential. 800-881-2021. 800-881-2021. That's the number that you call. And he also has a website, sweetjames.com, so you can check everything out there. One more time, the phone number, 800-881-2021, and his website, sweetjames.com. One of the more humorous parts of the evening yesterday that nobody watched was Democratic Rep. Joe Kennedy drooling on national television. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Joe Kennedy, Democrat, Massachusetts. This is the, what is this? This is the great-grandson. Yeah, the great-grandson of Joseph P. Kennedy, I believe. Anyway, it's another Kennedy in government. And this guy's a young guy, multimillionaire. And they put him up to give the retort to Trump. And it was weak sauce. It was absolute weak sauce, totally tepid, the usual liberal positions, nothing about it. Two hilarious and I will say very unfortunate things about this. One, you may have heard that he had some drool on the corner of his mouth. Now, his people are explaining that this was chapstick. But every time he moved his mouth and his head swayed from side to side as he was delivering the speech, there was a little glistening on his right side. Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, because the other funny thing is they had him set up with a car in the background with the open hood. It looked like it, you know, was being worked on. And I think it, you know, the car is a Mustang, so it's meant to show America getting back to work and that type of thing. But anyway, the Mustang's got an open hood. This is extremely unfortunate for those of you who are familiar with Kennedy family history. Well, it was Ted Kennedy that had a bit of trouble in a car, at Chappaquiddick, when he drowned Mary Jo Kopechne, went wandering for hours, called his lawyer, called everybody before he called for help, and she apparently later we found out that she slowly drowned. And Ted Kennedy's privilege and political connections got him off, but of course sunk his presidential dreams. So pundits are laughing about this, both the car in the background because of Chappaquiddick, and also the drool on the side of the mouth that supposedly is chapstick. So producer Robbie here is being funny. He's calling it Chapstick-aquiddick. So you get that that imagery there for you. Okay. Now, yes, but these responses to these big speeches, to State of the Union speeches, are always a little bit lame. They don't get a lot of press attention necessarily. They only get talked about if something goes wrong. Do you remember Marco Rubio? Marco Rubio, he had that dry mouth problem where he just was on it, and he got mercilessly tormented for that. I'm convinced that if Joe Kennedy had had no car in the background and hadn't over-applied his lip balm, nobody would be talking about his speech at all today. Totally forgettable. But I will tell you this, as far as the State of the Union goes, and this is very important, as far as the State of the Union goes, big success for Trump, huge success, and expect poll numbers. I predict this. Expect poll numbers for the president to rise. That will happen. It's just a matter of time. Okay. We're going to get to the FBI. There's some interesting developments there. And a couple more speech things. We'll do a couple more things from the chamber. Just some interesting observations. I've got one more clip, one more soundbite I want to play from last night. Good stuff. Okay, don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC, coming to you loud and clear from the Sweet James Studios. And we're located in an undisclosed place deep behind the orange curtain. 1-800-222-5222 is the phone number. Sam@samnation.com is the email. John Kelly, who is the White House chief of staff, had a bone to pick with a teacher in California. Now, what is General Kelly doing picking on a poor, innocent teacher here in Pico Rivera, California? Well, I'll tell you. Gregory Salcido is a California high school teacher. I think is also on the Pico Rivera City Council. And he was recorded giving a rant in class against a student who was wearing a pro-military shirt. And some of the things that he said, the audio is really terrible. Plus, there's a lot of swearing that I have to beep out. So it's not really conducive to being clear. But he basically said, Salcido goes, think about this, what he's saying to the student. Think about the people you know who are over there, talking in the military. Your freaking stupid Uncle Louie or whatever. They're dumb A-money monies. They're not like high-level thinkers. They're not academic people. They're not intellectual people. They're the lowest of our low. And the rant went on for some time. There's other stuff in there, but you get the idea. Mr. Salcido thinks that there are no smart people in the military. And the response to this, of course, has been insane because everybody's, first of all, the military has a tremendous number of intellectual people in it, smart people in it. And this guy just is anti-military. He's got an axe to bang. He's indoctrinating kids, right? It's a whole separate issue. So Kelly waded in on this and said, I think the guy ought to go to hell. I hope he enjoys the liberties and lifestyles that we have fought for. Yeah, I think the other part of the story really is, though, that do we really know, if we didn't have a video, would we have any idea what was going on inside of that classroom? Yeah, we're always told about how we need to pay teachers more. We got to take care of teachers. And of course, by and large, teachers are fantastic. But boy, are there some bad apples. You've got this teacher that is out of control, has an agenda, is an elected political operative, right? He's got a political career going on, plus teaching high school on the side. And this is, I mean, I've experienced this myself. I mean, I'm a product of public education. I spent a couple years at UCI before I finished up at Chapman. And I will tell you, you definitely, 100%, honestly, have teachers like this, have professors like this. And the worst part about it is a lot of the students that are sitting in class have no idea how to process this information. They don't have parents to talk to them. They don't have parents that they can come home to and say, like I did, well, I had a teacher just tell me that they're the military, a bunch of illiterate idiots. And they don't have parents that will go, well, that's not true, because let me tell you, you know, so-and-so went to Yale, served in the military. Now, this is a function. You cannot, as a parent, abdicate your role as a teacher to your kid, and you've got to talk to your kids at the end of the day. Trust me, it's very important, because you never know what they're being brainwashed with in class. All right, when we come back, Nancy Pelosi's remarks on the State of the Union speech and why it is very likely to be a disaster for the 2018 midterms. I will explain also. Let's talk about that FBI memo that's coming out any day now, and what the ramifications will be. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Can't stop addicted to the shindig. Chop top, it says I'm gonna win.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Hi, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I will tell you this about Nancy Pelosi's response to Trump's State of the Union speech. It was tone deaf. Now, remember, I mentioned that Nancy Pelosi did a lot of eye rolling and a lot of pursing her lips and just showing her absolute disdain for everything that was being done. Was being said up by Trump at the lectern. So here is her, and I want to start here. I want to start with her words describing Trump's speech. Listen to this.
It was a very transformative speech for some of us last night, because while our expectations for greatness and vision with the president are not high, he stooped to a new low in terms of how he dealt with issues. For example, the immigration issue and what it has meant to our country and how he characterized. The president presents himself as generous toward dreamers, but he's holding them hostage to the most extreme anti-immigrant agenda in generations.
Okay, and I'm just going to remind you again that in the poll, the CBS poll taken after the speech, and I guess it's CBS, okay? We're not talking Breitbart News here. CBS had a 75 approve to 25 disapprove. So Pelosi here is saying, look, we, you know, it's a transformative speech. I don't even know what she means necessarily by that, because we weren't expecting great things, but he stooped to a new low. And it's that part of her comments that I think really takes the cake and creates the biggest problem for her. Why? Well, first of all, who is Nancy Pelosi? I'll tell you, Nancy Pelosi is the face of the House Democrats. You could even take it a step further, but a lot of people don't even know Chuck Schumer. It's Nancy Pelosi being the House Minority Leader. It's the face of the congressional races that are coming up here for the midterms. November, we have big elections coming up. And these elections are going to potentially, we're told, at any turn, it's a blue wave is coming. And Democrats are going to be swept into power. It means the end of the Trump presidency, because Trump is going to immediately do what? He is going to be investigated, right? He's going to be impeached by these new Democrats that come in. So I want to figure out what's going to happen in November before November happens, right? I'm trying to get ahead of it here. And I think the Democrats are running races that are very nationalized, right? They're based on the big issues of boo Trump, right? Trump hate, opposition, resistance, immigration, and economy. Now, the Democrats shouldn't run on the economy at all because the economy is going gangbusters. So that's a bad move on their part. You can't run against Trump and the economy. So they're gonna try to run on immigration. But they're really running on an anti-Trump platform, and the anti-Trump platform is increasingly less based on reality. It's based on emotion. It's based on sort of the slanderous descriptions of who Trump is. It's based on hate. It's based on dislike, but it's not necessarily based on reality. And how I know that is, you know, Trump has, there are certainly times when you can say Trump has stooped to a new low. I mean, I disagree with it, but there are times when you can actually say that with a straight face. I am reminded of Trump's sort of, you know, unnecessary detour into attacking Gold Star families. And he got baited. I understand all that. But he, you know, during the election, Hillary Clinton set him up with that Gold Star family, and he went after them like he does. And that was just an unnecessary detour. Another example of such a detour would be into the you've got the gal who, what was her name? Miss Piggy or whatever, the Machado. Alicia Machado. Anyway, she was the beauty pageant contestant who perhaps was a little bit bigger, and Trump was criticizing her, and then he wouldn't let it go. Now, those are two incidents that you could, if you were in the opposition, say, well, that's a new law. What is a presidential candidate doing slamming some stupid beauty pageant contestant? How does that matter? And why is he going after, okay, they're Hillary's political pawns, but why is he going after this couple that have lost their son? Not good. But Trump gave a really positive, upbeat speech that most people overwhelmingly appreciated as such, and there's some quantifiable evidence behind it. So for Nancy Pelosi to stand up there and say, well, this is stoop to a new low, is detached from reality. You can't sell something if it's completely not based in fact. It might play to the base of the Democratic Party, but those are not the people you have to convince to win contested seats. And contested seats being where it's, you know, too close to call. Now, I have a little bit more evidence to back up what I'm saying here. And there's a Monmouth University poll that was released today. And the poll was conducted, first of all, almost entirely before Trump gave his State of the Union speech. And it says, it gives voters a generic ballot. And a generic ballot means in your upcoming congressional race, would you vote for a Republican or would you vote for a Democrat? Right. And it's really meant to test party likability. Right. Are voters being drawn to vote one way or the other? And it was essentially a dead heat. It was 47% to 45 favoring Democrats. And there's a 3.5% margin of error. And typically these polls do oversample Democrats, et cetera, et cetera. So it is close. You remember, we've been told this entire time that this blue wave is just going to sweep the nation and Republicans are going to lose their majority in the House. And this has been basically this every article that I see, especially from such august publications as The New York Times and The Washington Compost, I see this type of logic being put out there. Now, the fact that it's not happening and the fact that it's not happening, even before Trump gave his State of the Union speech, means that there is room for Trump to sway voters out there. And one evidence of that, back to the CBS poll, is he made some headway, and it's small, but listen to this. Trump credit for the economy among speech watchers before or after? And there are different ranges, but for a lot, like, do you think that Trump was, you know, is responsible for the good economy by a lot? Before the speech, it was 51%. After the speech, it was 54%. He actually moved the needle. So even by using we and being very inclusive with his language and avoiding the Obama pitfall of me, 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 I, he still was able to get to persuade some people that he had that he has some degree of responsibility here for all the good stuff that's happening. This is really good news. Now all that needs to happen is the good stuff. It needs to continue happening. In other words, the economy continues to improve. The further you get away from the Obama years, the worse the argument becomes that this is Obama's economy. That's what the Democrats are trying to do at every turn. Oh, this is a consequence of brilliant planning on the part of Barack Obama. This is all Obama administration material that Trump has eroded on the coattails of and is taking credit for. Of course, that's what he does. He's a charlatan, and et cetera, et cetera. So I think these personal attacks on Trump being a charlatan and being a con man and being a kind of grotesque character and all of that matters less and less as the economy picks up and as people find quantifiable improvement in their lives. And that against a backdrop of having these congressional races represented by Nancy Pelosi, who's sitting there and bold-faced lying about something that even, I mean, you talk about the independents. The independents are listening to Nancy Pelosi and then are looking at their 401k and are going, you know, I don't know. I feel a little guilty. You know, maybe everybody else isn't doing as well as me. But I'm doing great. And I don't know that I necessarily right now need to rock the boat. And for as unlikable as Paul Ryan can be, he's a far fresher face. And more enthusiastic a leader than Nancy Pelosi. And also right now, he's perceived as being on board with the president's agenda. And that's one of the takeaways, too, from last night. I mean, just it seemed the two were actually genuinely getting along. I mean, there was some interaction there before the speech. And that's something that people were always looking for, right? Is Paul Ryan obstructing Trump's agenda or is he going along with it? Michael Goodwin in the New York Post wrote that the party is now, it's now Trump's party. That it's obvious that he has seized control. He's got Paul Ryan behind him. He's got Mitch McConnell for the most part behind him. He's got an enthusiastic, he's got an enthusiastic caucus in the House and in the Senate that for the most part are behind him. And that now really this second year of the Trump presidency could see an enormous amount of forward movement for the benefit of us all, but also for the benefit of the elections that are coming up, where you just cannot run strictly as an obstructionist party. Your party platform cannot just be hashtag no Trump. It can't be that. There has to be something more there. And I think the Democrats truly are lost on this and truly are wandering in the wilderness. And it would help them, of course, to ditch Pelosi. But they can't do that now because, while Pelosi's older and she's a woman, you don't want to be a sexist and an ageist as a Democrat. That's a no-go. Pelosi also has tremendous amount of fundraising power. This is why she holds on. Pelosi can raise money like nobody's business. That's why she has the gig, in case you're wondering. So it's all about the money. She brings the money. But she also, they also have, it's a little bit of a hostage crisis. They can't get rid of her without being, opening themselves up to accusations that from their own party, from the own liberal wing of the party. And by the way, who's the one that's giving money to all these races? Is it coming from middle of the road Democrats that may swing the race? No. Money for the election is coming from the activist base. Money for the election is coming from the wealthy donors that oftentimes are further left than the rest of the party. I mean, the very first thing that Tom Steyer did was withdraw funding for congressional Democrats when Schumer folded on the whole whole shutdown, right? I mean, he gave up on Dreamers and shut down, and Steyer said, that's it, I'm with. I mean, Steyer's the guy that's pissing away $20 million running anti-Trump ads. We're going to do nothing, right, to move the needle. But you see, he's actually withdrawn support for fear, basically, purportedly, because Schumer wasn't, the Democrats weren't hard enough on Trump and let him get away with pushing DACA down the road. So the Democrats are in a pickle of a position. Meanwhile, the Republicans have got a president that is, look, his poll numbers can't go anywhere but up. And they've also got a party platform that finally is representative of conservative values for the most part. Now, not everything in the speech, I'm going to say this too, not everything in the speech really tickled me. There was a great deal said about needing to go after and really go hard on drug dealers, because that's the problem. We've got drug dealers in America. And I'm thinking right now, our sentencing is out of this world insane for drug crimes. If I thought for a minute that putting drug dealers away longer was going to fix the opioid epidemic, then I'd be the first one here to say, let's do it. But I don't think that's the solution at all. I mean, it's a complicated deal, but I know we've increased penalties on these crimes for years, and they've been going up and up, and we have people serving life sentences for drug crimes. It's crazy stuff. Meanwhile, drug use continues to go up and away. So that was kind of a no-brainer. He had some other kind of left-wing proposals, you know, nods to Ivanka Trump. He put that stuff into the speech. We'll see if any of it happens. So I don't know. Not all of it I was a fan of. But the core fundamentals of Trump's agenda, peace through strength, was a big part of it. He really got up there and said, we got to be the only way you deal with tyrants. The only way you deal with our enemies is to meet them face to face and look them square in the eye and build up our power, our military power. So he called on ending the defense sequester. And again, all of that very well received, got a lot of applause. None of that was dark. It was all very patriotic and basically inclusive of all of us, that we're one country, one people, one flag, and that we need to stand up to some of the more dangerous things going on in the world. Okay, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Back right after this.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Saw a movie last night with one of my favorite people, producer Robbie. We went and saw 12 Strong. I recorded the State of the Union address and watched it after the fact. Now, I had to do, by the way, on the way home, I had to make sure I didn't watch any media about it whatsoever. I didn't listen to the radio or nothing, because I wanted my reaction to the speech to be untainted by anybody's opinions. But anyway, we saw 12 Strong, and let me... I don't frequently do movie reviews here, but this is a story about the first U.S. force to enter into Afghanistan and lead to the eventual defeat of the Taliban. And this is immediately following, of course, September 11th. And it's about 12 guys that basically get dropped in from a helicopter in the mountainous regions of North Afghanistan, and it's freezing, and all they have is what they can carry, and they meet up with a warlord, a member of the Northern Alliance, and together with, you know, U.S. air support bombing key Taliban positions, they eventually moving on their objectives, and in 23 days, so just over 3 weeks, are able to reach their destination. So this movie, if you want to feel great about being an American, this is the movie to watch. This, well, I don't know if the last movie I saw with producer Robbie was about Benghazi. And that one didn't particularly make you feel great to be an American at all. That was the story of how we screwed the pooch and didn't take care of our people. This story is fantastic. And one of the things that Robbie is my favorite veteran tells me in talking to his friends, this movie is very accurate. In other words, this is not an inspired by a true story type deal. This is the types of criticisms that people in the know have made about the account are very nitpicky. So when you watch this movie, know this is really essentially how it went down. And I'm not going to give much of it away. The mission for a long time was classified. So the men that were part of this task force, Dagger, were really not able to get any kind of accolades when they came home. But the story of what they did is nothing short of insane, and it will move you. It will absolutely 100% move you. Go see it without question. By the way, you know who needs to see it is that idiot teacher in Pico Rivera. Oh, I was just talking about this at the top of the hour. This guy, Gregory Salcido, thinks everybody in the military is an idiot. Thinks everybody in the military is basically a rube. They're not academic people. They're not intellectual people. They're the lowest of our low. And I've listened to the recording that the student made of this guy tearing into the student that had a pro-military shirt. And I'm going to tell you something. Does the guy sound intelligent to you, Robbie, this teacher? That's the irony of it. He's putting down people in the military. I guarantee you yes, of course, there's some idiots in the military. I get that. There's idiots in every organization. But the military, this is just and if you watch a movie like 12 Strong, you will see what they what type of bravery, not just bravery, but also intelligence. I mean, you've got people that speak multiple languages. You've got people that have got a brilliant mind for gamesmanship and strategy. And these are not the lowest of our low. Far from it. These are the best that we have, and anyone in the military who has served deserves our undying respect. All right. Okie dokie. Yes, when we come back, I'm going to get to the FBI memo. I promise. I'm getting there. We're just plowing through all the stuff. All very important. We are definitely getting to some updates there. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We have John Wolfe up next with the news.
Talk Radio
790 KABC. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. 800-222-5222 is the phone number. Sam at samnation.com is the email. Now, yesterday, FBI Director Christopher Wray was allegedly shocked to his core after he viewed the four-page FISA memo on Sunday night, and then hours later asked Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe to step down. Now we are getting some insight into what went down in McCabe's final hours. Now, McCabe, you'll know, is the Obama administration holdover at the FBI. His wife was the gal who was running for a Virginia state Senate seat and received a ton of cash from McAuliffe, who is well known to be inside the inside of the Clinton machine. And he was their former campaign finance chairman. McAuliffe and the Clintons go back forever. Okay. At any rate. So you've got this memo that the FBI director sees, according to sources, is so shocked by that he immediately asks his number two to step down. And more importantly, I think more telling is that the number two does it, right? He just does it and goes radio silent. There's no protest. It's not like Comey, coming out of the woodwork. a day later and saying, oh, you'll see the righteous always win, you know, things like that. None of this. Radio silence. So you got that on one hand. Then you have, well, among others, you have Democrats like Adam Schiff, Representative Adam Schiff in California, who are saying, well, this is inflammatory. This is going to, you can't release this because it's going to put the FBI in danger. There's going to be problems. Anyway, all that good stuff. And then finally, I have this little bit of color to add to it. Back in January of 2017, when was that? A year ago? A year ago. The Inspector General Michael Horowitz, the guy that is finding all this bad stuff, who, by the way, is an Obama appointee. I don't know if you know this, but he was put in there by Barack Obama. He launched this investigation all the way back then into bias at the FBI. But do you remember what bias it was that he was purportedly investigating? That's right. He was looking into anti-Clinton bias, and that's why top Democrats, including Elijah Cummings and John Conyers, who first requested the investigation, were cheering it. They asked for it back in October. So even before the election, they thought the FBI was picking on Hillary Clinton. And this is as a consequence of that letter. Remember that letter that was released where first Hillary was let off in the summer and then, whoa, we found some new emails. We're reopening the investigation and the Democrats freaked out and requested this investigation. So this investigation, when it finally opened in January 2017 after the election, but before the inauguration, said that all the Democrats were excited. They had there was a crisis of legitimacy, quote unquote, at the FBI. Schiff said at the time, I think this was very appropriate for the IG, the Inspector General, to initiate. And I say hats off to my colleague, Elijah Cummings, for making the request for this investigation some months ago. It now has bipartisan support. Schiff continued, we had very serious and I believe very consequential decision by the director of the FBI to speak publicly about an ongoing investigation and in violation of the department's longstanding policy to do so. He goes on to criticize Mueller. By the way, remember, this was back when they didn't like Mueller. They immediately started to like Mueller after Trump canned him. And then it was, oh, my God, Mueller is the biggest Boy Scout, the best person since whomever, to come down and grace us with his presence. So this is all very fascinating. What does it mean? They are getting bitten in the butt by the very investigation that they themselves launched, and now they're crying foul. It is pure historical revisionism and nothing more. All right, more on this when we come back. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio, 790
KABC. Sam Rejofsky here from my friend, my attorney, my champion, Sweet James Bergner. This is the guy, folks, that you call if you've been in an accident or if a loved one's been in an accident. Make sure you call as well. You do not want to do any of this on your own. You don't want to call the insurance company. You don't want to deal with the guy that hit you. I mean, bad enough that he hit you. Now you don't want to talk to him and deal with all that mess. Have James and his team do it. They're the professionals. They get it. They understand what needs to happen, and they will help you. So here's what you do. You give them a call. All consultations are free. They're confidential. They don't cost you any money up front. In fact, you don't pay for any of the services until the end of your case when he collects, if and when he collects a settlement for you. So what do? Call 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021. He has over $400 million collected for his clients. It's a huge number, and that number continues to rise. 800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, talking about how this investigation into the FBI with a memo that will be released any day now. How this whole thing was launched by the Democrats originally. It's a very good reminder as we hear the Democrats protest this memo being released, as we hear them protest this investigation into the FBI, calling it politically motivated. Meanwhile, back in October of 2016, before the election, they were the ones that requested it. And Adam Schiff, the number one opponent of this investigation now, was one of its most prominent sponsors. Well, he didn't write the letter, but he allowed it. The two congressmen, Cummings and Conyers, for writing the letter and initiating contact with the inspector general. It is still the same inspector general that is handling this. It's still the same guy. And it is actually an Obama appointee, and his name is Horowitz. So anyway, what of all of this? Of course, this is political quicksand. Because this is bound to blow up, but I think their approach here is to repeat the lie so many times until it's believed. And the true believers will always believe the Democrats. For the true believers that hate Trump, there's no reasoning with them that this, in any way, shape, or form, is anything other than Trump pursuing the FBI. And this is how they want to look at it. But I will also say, I'll say this. I think, again, for the people that are in the middle, this doesn't wear well. This doesn't wear well. You can't request an investigation when it turns, begin to criticize it. And all of this was done on camera. I mean, these people said it. This is how I would, if I were Trump, I would use this in campaign ads. You're saying one thing one day and another thing another day. And this is what they're spending your tax dollars on. In fact, RNC ought to run these ads during some tightly contested elections. Say this is what the Democrats are doing over here when it's expedient and over there when the winds change. Oh, somebody somebody heard Trump on a hot mic say, oh, yeah, I'm releasing that memo. Because right now it's the memo is the way these declassification things work. It's ruled on by the committee. The committee voted to release the memo. The president has final word on whether the classified information is declassified. So you've got that, you know, you've got that going. Trump is going to release it, or so he said. He was, anyway, people are reporting it that they heard that he was insisting he was going to do it. It's just, yeah. So when would that be? He's got 5 days. It could be any day. I mean, it could be tomorrow. It could be Friday. We are off tomorrow, so we'll watch for it and hopefully can comment on it this Friday. All right. Good stuff. Couple of wrap-up items here at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this short break. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. One other thing from that Monmouth University poll that was released today. That shows that Democrats and Republicans are essentially in a statistical dead heat when it comes to these midterm elections. This is very different than what we've been hearing here for a while. Is it going to be a bloodbath for Republicans? There's another part of that poll. There's been a dramatic increase in the last month among respondents who are being asked, is America headed in the right direction? You know, this is a critical thing because it doesn't always matter where people are today. It matters where they think they're going to be tomorrow. This is just a basic principle of human psychology. We're able to put up with some stuff today that's crappy if we know that tomorrow is going to be a little brighter. And the percentage a month ago was 24%. 24% thought that we were headed in the right direction. That's a low number. And this, by the way, this poll was taken before the State of the Union speech last night. But only a few days before. So it's fairly current, right? That number in 1 month time went up to 37%. That is not an insignificant leap. It's not. And again, with these polls, I'm telling you, these polls right now, if anything, I'll tell you, if anything, these polls actually are skewed toward the Democrats. They almost always are, because the pollsters, you know this, the models are antiquated. They're not picking up Trump voters. And the other thing is people are just not, many people are not admitting to being pro-Trump. And especially where you have changed opinions, you've got households that are divided. You've got husbands that feel one way, wives the other, and they certainly don't want to get into a fight about it. So they're underreporting their positions. But I guess the last point on this too, as far as these midterm elections go, because all of this analysis into what happened during the State of the Union speech and what's going on with the economy is all headed toward these midterms to see what the makeup of the House is, which really will affect the direction of the country, right? If you've got obstructionist Democrats to take over the House, well, Trump's agenda is going to stall. And I don't necessarily think that's bad for him politically, but it's bad for the country. So one thing that's really important is we don't really have an idea in many of these races yet what the slate of candidates are. There's still primaries taking place in some of these races. So we don't know who's running. And you've seen a number of high profile resignations or retirements that are planned, like Trey Gowdy today announced that he is retiring from the House and going back to practicing law. The interpretation I have there really is money. Eventually, people who go to Congress run out of money because for how much travel there is that you have to pay out of your own pocket, for how much it costs to maintain separate lodging in one of the most expensive cities in the world, Washington, D.C., the job really doesn't pay that much. And he's a very talented lawyer, former federal prosecutor. He's going to go right into a very posh position with a big firm. He's going to make oodles of money. He may return to politics at some later date after he's made some cash. But my point here is, so he's retiring, and they're looking at that as a potential weakness in that race. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Who knows who's going to step in his place? And there could be a great candidate that comes into his place people get very excited about and show up for. And conversely, there could be a really bad Democrat in the race that nobody likes. And South Carolina, after all. So all these things to be considered. All right, we're off tomorrow night and back on Friday. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Great to be here.